Welcome to 1001 Radio Crime Solvers Podcast. This is your host, John Hagedorn, and we want 1001 Radio Crime Solvers to be your favorite place to go to enjoy a great mix of vintage detective shows from the golden age of radio. The scripts were great, the action was hot, and even the old commercials are enjoyable. And now, another episode of 1001 Radio Crime Solvers is ready to go. Enjoy!
Detective Agency.
Ahoy! It's me. Just came ashore.
From what? A boat?
A ship, Effie. A ship. Anything over 400 gross tons is a ship. Anybody knows that.
Well, may I inquire, what was your port of call?
Calcutta.
My, that was a quick trip.
Well, Effie, I'll tell you. I got so homesick for you, I couldn't stand it, so I assembled my gear and jumped ship.
Why, Sam, how sweet.
A fast there, gal. I'll be right down to dictate my report.
Bon voyage, Effie.
I've been worried sick. Where have you been?
On my way to Calcutta, sweetheart, where the dawn comes up like thunder.
Hey, what are you talking about? Calcutta?
And the flying fishes play. Ready, Effie?
Sam, why did you want to go to Calcutta, of all places?
I didn't, Effie. I hate Calcutta. I was Shanghai. To, Mr. Philip J. Fogg, purser, S.S. Lurene.
How do you spell that, Sam?
Lurene.
Oh, that's pretty. Sam, how could you be shanghaied in this day and age? I mean, isn't it against the law?
Stow it, Effie. You're pumping bilge water.
Sam, I am not.
From Samuel Spade, license number 137596, when you have the time, regarding the Calcutta trunk caper. Dear Mr. Fogg, the following report will explain the enclosed voucher, which is a claim against your company for the amount of $500 and no cents. It will also answer any questions you might be asked concerning the recent unpleasantness on board your ship. It all started yesterday morning in San Francisco when my secretary announced briefly and caustically that there was a lady outside who wanted to talk to me. I judged that she was worth talking to. She was.
Your secretary let me in.
Well, I'm glad she did. What can I do for you?
I'm Marcia Hopkins.
I see.
Mrs. Marcia Hopkins.
I see.
However, my husband is dead.
I see.
It's about my sister that I've come to you, Mr. Spade. I'm dreadfully worried about her.
Who's your sister?
Miss Constance Pendleton. And she's become involved with a ne'er-do-well, a completely worthless scoundrel, and a real foreign bluebeard.
All three?
It's one man, Mr. Spade. A Bulgarian, Major Andrea Rodnik. They're going to be married this afternoon, and I'm positive that his only interest is in her money. I'm convinced that he's going to kill her soon after the ceremony. He's done it to other wives in Europe. I've warned Constance and pleaded with her, done everything I could to stop it. But she's completely infatuated with him and refuses to listen to me.
Mm-hmm. What do you want me to do?
Prevent the marriage, if you can. Get the truth about Rodnik's background and face Constance with it. Oh, Mr. Spade, in some way, you've got to make her realize the seriousness of the situation. He's a ruthless character.
Well, do what I can, Mrs. Hopkins.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Spade. Oh, I've felt so alone and helpless until now.
Oh, really?
But you will do everything you can, won't you? We've got to save her life.
She daubed at her eyes with a stamp-sized handkerchief, patted the red-gold hair at her temples nervously, smiled at me bravely, and swayed out. By telephone, I learned that the Vrodnik Pendleton marriage license had been issued 4 days before, and that on the same day, Constance Pendleton had withdrawn a savings account to the tune of $45,000. I'd always wanted to, so I did it. I called at the Bulgarian consulate.
What can I do on you?
What do you know about Major Andrea Vrodnik?
Ha! Andrea Vrodnik! On him we have hate, great sadness, with shame for the ground that walked under him.
Oh?
Ha! Andrea Vrodnik!
Why is he so popular?
On the devil he is driven without horns. 6 women he has killed. 6 times he has insulted the police of Europe by refusing to confess. We have proof of the murders, but never can we prove the proof on him.
Yeah, sometimes it goes that way.
Never do we find the bodies of the 6 women. Only their money in the name of Andrei Vrodnik. My pardon.
Well, think nothing of it. You're just upset on you.
You're interested on him. Why? You go to Europe?
No, Vrodnik comes here.
Here on San Francisco. He marries again.
So I'm told.
Oh, by all the means, you must prevent it. Go to him, brave man. You do the world a service. Make violence on him. Even do you hang for it, your name will live.
With those valiant words goading me on, I left. The farther I got into the caper, the more it looked as if Marsh's fears for Constance Pendleton were very real and very well-founded. When Constance opened the door of her hotel suite, I could see 3 trunks and a number of smaller pieces of luggage all locked and ready to be taken out.
Yes?
Hey, Constance Pendleton?
Yes?
I'm a detective. My name is Spade.
Detective? What do you want?
I want to talk to you about that Bluebeard you're going to marry.
Get out of here.
You listen, I'll talk, and then I'll get out of here. I just left the Bulgarian consulate. Vrodnik has been accused of the murders of 6 women in Europe. Each of them were wealthy. Each of them married him, and each time Vrodnik came into all their money.
Are you trying to blackmail me because of the lies about my fiancé's past? If you are, you're wasting your time.
Well, no matter what I'm doing, I'm wasting my time. But to put you straight, your sister hired me, and I am now resigning. She's worried about you, not me.
Then you should spend more time investigating your clients, Mr. Spade. You could have saved both of us some time. I have no sister. This is my wedding day. Goodbye, Mr. Spade.
As I left the room, I maintained the stern facial expression I reserved for moments of great shock. But once outside the door, I allowed myself to be carried on the wave of rage and embarrassment for just a minute, and I kicked over 2 potted palms. As I leapt down the corridor, I was overtaken by none other than Marcia Hopkins.
Did you see her?
Let's talk about you first.
Did you stop the marriage?
Why did you really want that marriage stopped?
But I told you.
You told me you were her sister.
Oh.
She said she didn't have any sister.
All right, Sam, I did lie to you about that. But I'll tell you who I really am.
I don't want to know who you are. I don't ever want to know. All I want from you is my honestly earned fee and a brief but permanent goodbye.
Oh, no, Sam, please listen to me. We've got to save that girl. I have $500. That's all I have. Would it be enough?
What's your real name?
Marsha Vrodnik. Yes, he's my husband. I've been married to him for 10 years. We've traveled all over Europe, and I never knew where the money was coming from. He left me at times for 2 weeks or a month, and then when he'd come back, there'd be more money. I just realized that that's when he must have been killing those poor women. And I know that's what he's going to do this time. I just can't stand it. You've got to protect her.
That should be easy. We'll let him get married and meet him at the door with a bigamy warrant.
Then you will see me through this.
I might.
Oh. In my bag, there's $500. Take it. If we can't stop the marriage, then don't let him out of your sight. Not even for a minute. He's a beast, Sam. A beast.
Marcia dropped me in front of the Beast's Hotel, and I climbed some fake marble steps to the 2nd floor and knocked at his door. The man who opened it was heavy, handsome, in a swarthy, coarse sort of a way, and glowing conceit through 2 eyes, one monocled, one not.
You are facing Major Andrei Vrodnik, 1st Bulgarian Horse. What want you?
You are facing Saul Fox of the law firm of Fox, Smedley, Van Dusen, and Grip.
You overwhelm yourself.
I came here to warn you. If you go through with a marriage to Constance Pendleton, you're going to find yourself tangled with civil law.
Warn Andrei Vrodnik, who has personally led more saber charges than you have teeth in your skull.
Yes.
Who has personally split, slashed, and impaled on his own blade more men than you have fingers and toes. You warn me? What is this talk?
You're going to have a bigamy charge slapped on you 5 minutes after you slip her the ring. The warrant signed by Mrs. Marsha Vrodnik.
Bigamy? Ha! I laugh. This is not bigamy.
Marsha's your wife, isn't she?
That bigamy was committed when I married her. I had another wife then. You call yourself a lawyer, then you know that only the second marriage is bigamy. The ones following that are nothing, nothing but interludes.
Okay, Major, go ahead and have your interlude. I'm just warning you.
Oh, Speaks, we are being married on Redwood City from a justice of the peace 1 hour previous. Then we are sailing through the SS Lurine at midnight with our honeymoon. Already a droshky awaits for the baggage and luggage. Go now before I'm losing my temper. If you're ever in Calcutta, look me up. Da!
I could see the direct approach was getting me nowhere, so I decided to proceed by stealth. I waited outside the building, and when he left, I tailed him. He made four stops at a second-hand store, a hardware store, a surgical supply house, and an undertaker supply house. At these places, he purchased the following items: an oversized steamer trunk, black with brass fittings, a large ball of rope twine, two large lead sash weights, a set of surgical instruments, and at the fourth and final stop, the undertaking supply, he bought two items, a 20-foot length of rubber tubing and a pump. He returned to the second-hand store with his other purchases, put him inside the trunk and ordered it sent up to Constance's hotel immediately, and thereupon, it took himself to the same place. Marcia was waiting in the empty lobby when he went in. I crouched behind a pillar, turned up my hearing aid, and listened.
Did you get the thing?
Yeah. Now listen, my darling. We must work fast. Yeah. As soon as the trunk arrives, before she has the chance to get to
yes,
the telephone...
Yes, Andre, but please, no cutting in the apartment.
As you wish, my darling. Now, you know what you have to do. Yeah, while I'm getting her into the trunk, you'll change her clothes, put on her traveling dress, the hat with the...
What is it? What's the matter?
Nothing. Come, we must make haste.
They made haste to the elevators, and I made haste to the row of house telephone booths around the corner and called Constance's room.
Hello?
Mrs. Rodnick?
Speaking.
Listen, get out of that room right away. Don't take the elevator. Go down the stairs.
Who is this? What are you talking about?
I haven't got time to explain, and you haven't got time to listen. All those stories about your husband are true. He's going...
Hello? Are you still on the line?
My hand clawed out to the door handle, but I couldn't reach it. I felt as if the walls were closing in around me, and just before it got dark, I had the crazy notion that I was inside Brodnick's big black trunk with the brass fittings. I could still hear Constance's voice way off in the distance, somewhere in the direction of Calcutta. I tried to shout to her, to warn her, and then the lid closed over me. I shook my head trying to get the bells out of it. Then I remembered where I was and what had happened. I was still wedged into the bottom of a phone booth where I'd slumped when Brodnick sapped me. I got out of there somehow and grabbed a taxi for the Embarcadero. The time was 11:55. The SS Lorraine was scheduled to sail at midnight. I was no sooner across it than they hauled up the gangplank and the ship started moving out of the berth. I didn't know where she was bound for and I didn't much care. I checked the passenger list and found that Major and Mrs. Andreev Brodnick were in stateroom 12, A deck. 1 minute later, I was hammering on the door of stateroom 12. The woman in Brodnick's stateroom was Constance, and she was not in a trunk.
I thought I told you to stop interfering in our affairs.
Yeah, your husband told me to, but I didn't like the way he did it.
Get out from here. Get out.
I see you got your trunk in here where it's handy. Doesn't it make the stateroom kind of crowded?
Why don't you give up, Mr. Spade? Two times already, you are twice a fool. Marcia has no money to pay you, neither have I, even if she had the case. And believe me, she has not.
Oh, why do you even bother talking to him, Andre? Mr. Spade, will you go now, or will I have to call the steward and make a complaint against you?
I went. I still thought Marcia Hopkins was somewhere on that ship. I still didn't like the look of that trunk. I found the purser's office and went in. You looked at me as if you thought I was a stowaway, Mr. Fogg, and you were right.
I'll have to make arrangements for you to ride back with the pilot, Mr. Spade. You realize, of course, that you're subject to a fine.
Look, I don't want to do anything illegal. You know, it was just an impulsive thing. Couldn't I book a passage?
Oh, there's the matter of your passport. We could arrange your visa and so on in San Pedro. We'll put in there in the morning.
Well, that's good enough. How much is the fare?
Oh, let me see. That's $483.87, exclusive of tax.
Oh, hey, now, wait, I wasn't thinking of taking quite such an extensive voyage, you know. I just wanted to get a little sea air and... How much to Pedro?
I'm afraid you don't understand, Mr. Spade. This is not a coastwise steamer. Our first official port of call is Calcutta.
Yeah, I know, but... Calcutta?
That's in India.
Well, don't you have something a little less expensive, like steerage or...
There is only one stateroom available, number 14A deck. Take it or leave it.
Okay, okay, Calcutta. After buying my passage to Calcutta, I had exactly 12 cents left. This I gave to the steward who showed me to my stateroom. He thanked me, kicked me in the shins, and left. Out on deck, a tall, red-nosed old gentleman in knickerbockers and a yachting cap was taking a turn around the deck. With him was a face I'd seen in the morning lineup down at the Hall of Justice a dozen times. He was a hotel thief by profession, name of Norman Gorman. He knew me, too, but he didn't give me a tumble. I fell into step with him.
Ah, sea air. Nothing like it, am I right?
Yeah, I guess it's okay, but there's so much of it.
Bracing salt spray. Nothing like it. Hey, Norman, my lad.
I hate it. I hate boats. Suppose there was a fire on board.
Fire? Oh, ridiculous. Is this your first voyage to the Orient?
Yeah.
The inscrutable East.
You've made this trip before?
Oh, yes, indeed. I've worked this line. Yes, indeed. I make this voyage very often. Business interest out in India. Tea, you know. Runs in my family. Sturgis's Golden Orient in the little yellow package. Ever tried it?
No, I never indulge.
Huh? Don't drink tea. That's ridiculous.
Commodore, I need a drink. I ain't happy. Suppose there was a fire on board here.
Ah. Well, let's all have a drink.
Yeah, suppose there was.
Shall
a
we?
Fire.
Come on, I'll shut you to a drink, sir.
Not me, Commodore. I just remember this is Fire Prevention Week. The nearest fire alarm to Vrodnik's stateroom was on the companionway leading to the A-deck corridor. It was a glass-enclosed box with a small hammer hanging on a chain. I broke the glass and turned the key. In 3 seconds flat, the entire population of A-deck were shoving each other up the companionway, grabbing for life preservers as they went. The steward, hammered on the door of stateroom 12, opened it, shouted inside, and Vrodnik and Constance reluctantly came out. I ducked inside, grabbed the handle of the trunk, and started dragging it. When I got it into my stateroom, I broke the lock and lifted the lid. It was Marsha, all right. There was just time to see that before the stateroom door flew open and the ship's officer stuck his head in.
I said, move it, you. Alarm?
Why, no, I didn't. What's wrong?
Never mind that. Here, take this life preserver. Get going.
Okay,
now.
Okay.
On.
Don't touch me. It makes me nervous. Twenty minutes later, the captain announced to the mob up on the deck that it was a false alarm, and the passengers drifted back to their cabins. I tried to look casual as I unlocked my stateroom door and walked in. Then I stopped trying. The trunk was still there, but the lid was standing open, and it was empty. I went down to B deck and found the cabin occupied by Norm and the Commodore. That door was locked, so I kicked it in. You could still see the marks on her wrists and ankles where the cord had been. It was the girl I had seen in the trunk. It was Marsha Hopkins, and she was very much alive.
I'm sorry. I thought it was... Oh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? You've got to help me, Sam.
Why should I help you?
He's crazy. They're both crazy.
It all depends on who's in the trunk, doesn't it, Marsha? When it was Constance, you didn't think he was so crazy.
Oh, don't you understand? I had to pretend that I'd help him. He was going to kill her right there in the hotel room. I told him it was too dangerous. If anybody looked in the trunk, it would be safer if she was in there alive. So he finally agreed and said he'd wait until we got out to sea to kill her. And then he was...
Yeah,
going
I know about that.
Oh, the idea was so awful, I couldn't stand it. I started to scream, and then he stuffed the gag in my mouth and tied me up. He must have used chloroform or something, because the next thing I knew, I was in the trunk. And that little dark man was leaning over me. He and that old man with the knickers. He brought me here.
No, they pulled a switch on you. You were the fall gal all along.
Oh, you've got to believe me. It was the only way I could save her life. You're the only one I can turn to, Sam. That little thief and the old man, they'd deliver me dead if there was an extra $25 in it. Oh, say you'll help me, Sam. Please say it.
Well, when you ask me like that, what else can I say?
Oh, you do believe me, darling. You do believe me.
Come on, let's get out of here.
I'm sorry, Mr. Spade. Please step back inside. I promised my associate, Mr. Gorman, that I would not allow this young lady to risk her life by leaving this cabin.
You're getting into this cave at the wrong end, Commodore. It's wound up. They've bungled it. It's no good anymore.
You may be right. But you understand my position, sir. I can't take any chances. You've talked to Mr. Gorman?
Norm? Yeah, I talked to him.
He took you into his confidence?
Stop making with the pistol, Commodore. You don't know how to use it anyway.
Well, heavens, Norm, you're as white as a sheet. What is it?
Oh, he's sick. Go get a doctor.
Yes, indeed. Right away.
Listen, Spade. Take her with you. Get out of here. I don't want no part of this.
You got it bad, Norm.
I'm sick, I tell you. The way I had it sized, this was a clean caper, a snatch. I figure the dame here's an heiress or something. Maybe they drop her off in L.A., connect some ransom and go on. I figure there was enough for all of us. Oh, but that creep, that Brodnik, he's crazy. He's a regular Jack the Ripper.
Stop babbling, Norm. Tell me what happened, exactly what happened.
I get a sinking feeling in my stomach every time I think about it. Well, I go in, see? He's very smooth, very businesslike. He offers me a drink. I accept it. He mixes a couple of highballs for me and the dame, and then he starts talking. I guess she don't know all about it before this, because she gets just sick as I do. First, I think he's kidding. Then he drags out this set of cutlery like a doctor uses to operate on people. Only he's got something else in mind. The porthole, you understand?
Oh, please. I don't want to hear anymore.
Being as it's you he has in mind, I don't blame you. My stomach.
Hey, Norm. Norm.
Oh. Here he is, the ship surgeon. Oh, dear me. What?
Stand away from him, please. Help me get him into the bunk.
Sure, Doctor.
Take the shade off that light, please. Yes.
He's dead, isn't he?
Oh, yes, he's dead, of course. Who poisoned him?
I didn't waste any time answering him. I grabbed him by the arm. Before he could object, I was pushing him up the companionway to A-deck. It was probably too late to save Constance's life, but she'd drunk the same poison, and I was pretty sure she had, but if I was going to nail him for the murder of Constance, I had to get there before the evidence vanished. We got there just in time. I don't need to tell you what we saw, and I'd rather not. Brodnik rose slowly to his feet, clicked his heels military fashion, and bowed very low.
Ah, the ship's surgeon. How opportune. Perhaps you could advise me, Doctor. After all, I am, in all honesty, even still, a mere amateur at this sort of thing.
After Brodnik had been taken into custody, we took another turn around the deck. It was daylight, and the ship was lying to off San Pedro. This time, the fresh air really felt good, and so did Marcia.
It's all over, Sam.
Yes, sweetheart, it's all over.
But not between us. Say it, Sam. Say it's not all over between us.
How can it be?
I knew it. I knew you felt the same way. All my life before, it's been like a terrible nightmare. Never really happened.
But it did happen, sweetheart.
Oh, but you can forget it, darling, can't you? Please forget it.
I'd like to, Marcia. I really would.
Hold me close, Sam. Never let me go.
You're beautiful.
Is that all, Sam? Nothing else?
Yeah. Lots else. That's why I think we better say goodbye right now. Because when I feel like this, I get foolish. And if I get foolish with you, I'm likely to wake up in a trunk someplace. And that, Mr. Fogg, is the true account of the Calcutta trunk caper. It was Since my voyage was interrupted through no fault of my own, I trust you will advise your company to refund my passage minus the one-way trip to San Pedro. Period. End of report.
Sam Spade is played by Howard Duck.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Listen now to The Adventures of Sam Spade, starring Howard Duff in The Convertible Caper.
Sam Spade, Detective Agency.
Me, sweetheart.
Sam, I knew you'd have the courage to come back and face it.
Well, I'm back, Effie. What shall I face first?
You didn't do something else, did you, Sam?
Besides what?
Besides running away with that woman in a stolen car.
You're a little mixed up, Effie. The car was stolen from her.
You mean it was her own car?
Well, not exactly, Effie. You see, she stole it from somebody else, and then somebody stole it from her, and then I got it back for her.
Well, it must have been quite a car to be worth all that trouble.
It wasn't so much the car, Effie, as...
Body? Sam, I don't understand.
Think it over, sweetheart. I'll be right down to dictate my report.
Look at you. Can't you take no for an answer?
And just what do you mean by that, Miss Perrine?
Claw marks on your face.
Wrong again, sweetheart. She said yes, I said no. Hence the scratch.
I knew she was that type the minute she walked into this office. That ankle bracelet and green nail polish.
Green nail polish.
Well, cute colors.
This one goes to homicide, Effie.
Oh, not another murder, Sam.
What else? Two, Detective Lieutenant Dundee from Samuel Spade with license number 127596. Subject, the convertible caper. Dear Dundee, it has been a dull morning, but just before lunchtime, things began to brighten up. Her clothes looked like money, and what they were wrapped around looked even better. She eased herself into the chair I pushed up for her, rattled about $1,000 worth of charm bracelet at me, and after she'd arranged her legs, mouth, and eyes to our mutual satisfaction, she allowed me to hear the sound of her beautiful voice.
I do not know whether you will be interested in my case or not, Mrs. Spade.
Put your mind at rest, Miss...
Estrada.
Miss Estrada.
Who knows? Perhaps I am merely a waste of time.
My time is your time, as you stay in the States, Miss Estrada.
Oh, you are very sympathetic, very kind. Entonces, my automobile has been stolen.
When and from where?
Last night, after midnight, while I was checking in at the Hotel San Rafael, where I am staying. I foolishly left it parked outside with the keys in it.
Have you reported this to the police?
No.
I suggest you do.
No.
No?
No.
Well, why not?
Because I stole it from another.
I see.
No, but you do not yet know all. If the police find the card and notify the one from whom I stole it, then that one will know that I am in San Francisco.
And that's bad.
Oh, he's going to stay gone. If he finds out I am in San Francisco, then he will come here and kill me. That is why I must recover the car rapidly and without the police. You will be glad to help me.
Be very pleasant, Mrs. Strada, but my car's not exactly in my line.
You wish that I...
don't think anybody would murder you just for stealing his car.
Oh, not for the car, no. Already he tried to kill me once, twice, three times. So I take the car and drive away rapidly.
Away from where?
Mexico State of Chihuahua, where this pig resides who wishes to murder me.
Why?
Oh, he drinks. He becomes a beast. He accuses me of... Look, Look here on my shoulder, the scar. Well, already he cuts me with a knife. Uh-huh. Now you have seen something that changes your mind about me, huh? You see that I am sincere.
Why, Mrs. Strada, I never had any doubts.
Oh, please. I am without friends. You will call me Nietzsche, okay?
Yes, indeed, Nietzsche.
Bueno, now we are friends. In the car is sitting the pig.
Hey, what's this pig's name?
Pig is the only name I will honor him with. Pig. Pig.
Mm-hmm. What makes a car is this?
Lanza. You know this kind of car?
Yeah, it's a foreign car. I've seen a few around. This must have set the pig back several thousand bucks.
Huh, he steals everything. Listen, my darling, please notice. Around here is pink. With blue fenders.
Not anymore. That's the first thing a car thief changes, the paint job. Any other distinguishing marks?
Yes. I think. It has a radio.
You don't say.
Uh-huh. And it has two windshield wipers.
Uh-huh. Well, I'll buzz around, meet you. If I find anything, I'll let you know. My fee is...
Yes. That is something else. I have no money.
Oh, that's great. That's just great.
But I am sincere. You said so. Look, my darling, see this. It is worth very much. See? This little charm alone. Platinum set with diamonds. Worth very much. You will keep it until I pay you, huh? Adios, Father.
She thrust the charm bracelet into my hand, bit me on the ear, and departed. I put a Band-Aid on it, ran some cold water over my head, poured myself a stiff slug of bourbon, and examined the bracelet. The dangle, she pointed out, was a white metal disc with a monogram in diamonds. Two vertical bars with a horizontal one on top. It was the Greek letter pi or the initials PT, depending on who had stolen it from whom. I knew it was at least worth my fee. I dropped it into my pocket and went out. My first stop was over on Mission. The sign on the building says, Masterpiece Auto Painting, Joe Rembrandt, proprietor.
Man, long time no see.
Hello, Joe.
Got something you want painted?
No, but I think you may have painted something I want.
Damn, you know me. They drive them in the front, we spray the paint on them, and push them out the back. No questions asked.
That's quite a turnover, Joe.
Yeah, we're going big time. Got the exclusive now for the syndicate work in the hill.
Is that right?
Yeah. What are you looking for, Sam? A murder car?
Could be. It's a custom job, foreign car. The answer? Yeah, here's what it looks like.
Yeah, convertible. Sure, come in this morning. Two color job.
Which two colors?
Canary yellow body, baby blue fenders. Yeah, quite a car, Sam. Quite a snazzy heap.
Heap, huh?
Yeah. Is that what you want to know?
It was. Happy Herman Heap was one of the biggest used car thieves in the city. As I got off the streetcar in front of Happy Herman's lot, a flash of canary yellow paint caught my eye. I strolled down between the rows of cars and found it.
Yes, sir, Heap's the name. Happy Herman Heap. Every car on this lot is in perfect mechanical condition. Take your choice.
Kind of hard to choose, Herman. There's so many here.
Yes, sir. It takes a heap of heaps to make a heap of heaps.
Yeah. That yellow job with the blue fenders, then?
Yes, sir, but the motor in that car, it does need some work. Now, over here...
Does it run?
Yes, it'll run, but over
now,
here...
This is more what I want. Let me try it. Sounds all right to me.
Oh, idling, yes, but needs some work in the transmission or the differential.
Mind if I drive it around the block?
Well, the mechanics were just about to work on it. Besides, I'm afraid this car is more than you'd care to invest.
Well, let me try it out anyway. Here, I'll leave it a deposit. I reached in my pocket for Meech's charm bracelet. He took one look at it, and his expression changed.
Well, why didn't you say so? No deposit is necessary. The car's yours. Drive it as far as you like.
Thank you, Herman Heath. I took him at his word. I put the magic bracelet in my pocket, drove back to O'Farrell Street, parked in front of the San Rafael Hotel, slipped the doorman a buck to wash it for me, and went on into the lobby. The desk clerk said that Senorita Estrada had checked out 30 minutes before, leaving no address. I found the house chick in the bar and asked him for a rundown.
Yeah, I remember her, Sam. Very nice dish.
Any callers, Steining?
Yeah, two guys.
Yeah?
They went out when they came. They've been back since.
Who were they?
You won't believe it, Sam. One of them was Tom Carey.
What's he doing in San Francisco? He's wanted for murder.
Yeah, I don't know, but there must be plenty in it if you brought him back across the border.
He's staying here?
Yeah. Room 613.
Do me a favor, will you, Tiny?
Anything at all, Sam.
There's a car parked outside in the loading zone here. Store it in the hotel garage for me, will you? Upstairs, as far out of sight as you can get it. I went upstairs and rang the buzzer at room 613. The door was opened by a little dark-complected man with hard eyes and Indian features. There was a mean-looking knife in his hand, but he put it away at a nod from Tom Carey.
How'd you find out I was in town?
Not from me, Chief.
I don't know how much she told you, Sam, but if she told you this much, she was 11. It's a $1 million caper. And you know some of the things I've done for less.
What's in it for me?
What'd she pay you?
Nothing. She left this charm bracelet in Hawk.
Now, boss, I caught him now.
Shut up, Parker. Give me that bracelet.
Watch it, Tom. Don't crowd me. I got something bigger than this, or you wouldn't be here.
All right, Sam, what do you want?
I want to hear you talk.
I guess you know I've been down Mexico, eh?
I'm listening.
I got a little business down here, garage business.
Running hot cars across the border in the States?
We pulled them all. Little body work and his serial number, like plastic surgery.
Sounds like a good business. You shouldn't be neglecting it.
You met the dame.
She says you want to kill her.
I was off my trot. I scared her. I didn't mean anything. I thought I could scare her into sticking around. I'll let Parco nick her shoulder a little bit.
Oh, just a little bit.
Yeah. I figured her wrong. I know that now. If I could see her for 5 minutes just to talk to her, I know it'd be okay.
I can't help you, Tom. I want to talk to her myself.
Listen, she hasn't got a penny, only that car. She figures I'm peddling that.
Not anymore.
She already sold it?
Some car thieves took it. She hired me to price it.
Listen, Sam. Maybe broke in a strange country, I'd look good to her again. Here's $1,000, Sam.
Well, this is so sudden, Tom.
Nothing. When you see her again, give her that bracelet back, huh? It was a present from me. And whatever you do, don't find that car.
Okay, Tom, it's a promise.
Thanks,
Sam. Only one thing I don't understand. You said it was a $1 million caper.
I meant that. She's worth $1 million to me, Sam.
The girl, Tom?
Or the car? Oh, I wish you hadn't asked that question, Sam. I really do.
Back to the convertible caper, tonight's adventure with Sam Spade.
When Tom Carey said a $1 million caper, he meant just that. He never risked a rap for less than $100,000, and no dame that ever lived was worth more to him than a hot mink coat. If Nietzsche wasn't the $1 million package, the car was. I didn't know what was in it. With Tom, it might be diamonds, dope, smuggled Chinese, or just plain money. So I went back to the hotel garage.
Number 1279.
I climbed the long, curving ramp to the second floor and found the canary yellow De Anza convertible crowded in behind four ranks of cars at the rear of the building. I started to work on it. Nothing in the luggage trunk, nothing under the seats, under the upholstery, and the door panels, nothing anywhere. Then I got Piney Stover, and the two of us went over the second time.
That's a cold lead, Sam.
It's not, I know it's not. Now think, Tiny, what's different about this car?
Well, solider built than most, good body of work. I don't know. Hey, here's something.
What?
There's a hole punched out of this fender over here. About the size of a quarter.
Let me see that.
Yeah, right here. It curves under, see?
Yeah.
What's that you got?
Charm bracelet. Did you say this dangle on here was what was cut out of that fender?
Let me see. It fits. Fits even the curve.
Yeah.
What does it mean, Sam?
The dangle on the bracelet is solid platinum.
Hey, Sam, are you trying to tell me the fenders on this heap are solid platinum?
You got a pocket knife, Sam?
Yeah.
Thanks.
It shines. Sam, is this a hot car?
I didn't answer him. I didn't have to. He looked in the gray-white gleam of the bracelet shine at a square of paint I'd scraped off the fender and answered the question himself. Nietzsche's convertible was convertible in more ways than one. It was about the hottest car in San Francisco as of that moment. After I'd left the garage, I tried to phone Tom, but he wasn't in. I had an uncomfortable feeling he was out looking for me. He was. As I stepped out of the phone booth, there was a rush of air past my left ear. A knife stuck in the wood, less than an inch west of him. Came out in the street in time to see him duck around the corner into an alley. I ran after him. I collared him and stood him up against the wall.
Let me go. Let me go. I cut you down.
What do you know about that car? What do you know about that car? Come on, talk. You get more of this.
I don't know nothing. They don't tell me nothing.
Where's Meacher?
I don't know. Meacher don't know nothing either. Only Tom Tom and...
Tom Tom and who else?
I don't talk no more.
They cutting you in?
I don't need no cut. The boss, he pays me good. 40 pesos. Sometimes more.
Work for me and I'll cut you in.
I cut you to pieces. The boss treats me good.
Sure, you do all the dirty work. There's any trouble, you'll take the rap.
What means rap?
They put you in a little room and squirt gas in you. You fall dead.
Gas? Tom Tom do this?
He does indeed.
Venga. Come, I take you to see the man. Senor Rafael. I think he will be very happy to see you.
The place Paco took me to was about as high on Russian Hill as you can get. The house was old, faced in brownstone, and had a high iron fence around it. On the gate was a nameplate, H.H. Lovelace. When I opened it to go in, I noticed that Paco was no longer with me.
Oh, Mr. Spade, come in, come in.
The gray-haired gentleman who greeted me was wearing a wing collar, a carnation, and a very distinguished air. I could hardly believe it, but he was definitely, beyond a shadow of a doubt, none other than the one and only Happy Herman Heath.
Well, Mr. Spade, I see that you're surprised.
I'm overwhelmed, Mr. Heath.
Lovelace. Lovelace, that is the correct name. For my avocation, I selected my first and second names, the H.H., you know. My full name is Herman Heath Lovelace. About that car, Mr. Spade.
Yeah, about that.
I must own that you outwitted me. I was rather proud of my little device, the disc on the charm bracelet, you know. When you showed it to me at the my business establishment, I naturally thought you were authorized to take the car.
Yeah, naturally.
However, I'm not averse to enterprise in a young man, and I'm prepared to pay for my blunder.
You said a million I still couldn't accept, Mr. Lovelace.
Oh, why not?
I was hired to recover that car for my client. It's not mine to sell.
Well, it's certainly not hers.
I don't care whose it is. All I know is that my client's life is in danger, and it has something to do with that car.
Miss Estrada?
Yeah.
Excuse me one moment. Please arrive.
Hello, Papa.
That's all she said. And she stood there looking at me in that way that made you not care who she was double-crossing or why. Then she turned to Lovelace, alias Herman Heath.
How much does he know?
Alas, everything, I fear.
He has agreed to our terms?
Yes.
Good. I must have my bracelet back now, Sam.
Sure, it's right here in my... I reached in my coat pocket for the charm bracelet she'd given me to keep for it. It wasn't there. It wasn't in any of my pockets. I guessed that it was in one of Paco's pockets. Meacher watched me fumbling, her eyes blazing with anger.
Fool, you have lost it. We are helpless without that.
I thought it was the car you wanted.
Please, please, one thing at a time. I should guess that we first gained possession of the car.
Yes, Lovelace, you are right. First the car.
Ah, yes. This is the car at last. A princess in vulgar raiment, but still a princess. No royal coach carrying a king to a coronation ever held such riches.
Oh, you talk too much.
Oh, I do. Well, take your place at the wheel, Major. We shall drive out of here into a splendid future. After you, Mr. Spade.
No, no, Mr. Heath. After you.
Yes. Ironic, isn't it, that of all my varied interests, I've never learned to drive a car.
That are too buckled, Diego.
You seem kind of shaky, Major. Are you sure you can handle the car down the ramp?
I'm very good driver, Waffle.
Meacher, stop, put on your brakes. There's a man coming up the ramp.
He was dead before I got to him. As I leaned over him, I saw the bracelet lying beside his hand. I picked it up and walked back to the car. Meacher and Herman Heath Lovelace were sitting in stony silence, glaring at each other.
Is he dead?
Yeah.
Was the bracelet on him?
I didn't look.
Lovelace, go and frisk him.
Must I? It's very distasteful to me. Come, Mr. Spade.
You fool. We trust this detective. Go on.
you help.
Get in, Sam. Get in. We leave him here. What's the matter? Is something wrong?
Oh, nothing at all.
Come back here! This is an outbreak. I've been sick. Come back here, I
say. Please, Harpo, a cigarette.
Sure, sure. Here you are.
Gracias.
De nada.
I saw you pick up the bracelet. I meant that you should share it with me. That is why I gave you the bracelet in the first place. I liked you.
Couldn't have been because you were safe as long as Tom didn't know where the bracelet was, and if you had to kill somebody for it, it would be me.
Please, querida, what does it matter now? We are together, we have the car, we have the bracelet, and the pig is dead.
That's what worries me.
Oh, surely you do not think I meant to kill him.
Of course not. Your foot just slipped. You stepped in the gas by accident.
Yes, that was it.
It won't stick, sweetheart. Not with me.
But with the police?
My story won't help you. I don't know enough.
Oh? Then I tell you everything. I was with Tom Tom for a year. I hated him 365 days. I tried to run away. Always that Paco came after and brought me back. Then Senor Lovelace came with the car. Senor Lovelace had much money, but he could not take it from the country. So he bought, stole platinum. Some he received from refugees who had sent their fortunes abroad in that form. But there was no safe way to get it across the border.
So for a cut, Tom had the platinum made into fenders and welded onto the car. Why was the bracelet so important?
It was too dangerous for Lovelace to bargain directly. Tom Tom was to get the money for the platinum and give the little piece of the fender as a token.
Yeah.
Lovelace would know who to give the car to when they showed it to him.
That's why he let me drive the car off the lot, huh?
I don't care, darling, even if you tried to steal it. Now we understand each other, no? You are tough, too. Tougher than Tom Tom, I think.
Well,
now we have everything for ourselves, you and me. What do we care for the others, huh?
You make a good pitch, sweetheart. You look beautiful while you're making it. But I don't like your driving.
What do you mean?
Pull over. I'm driving this heap back to the city.
No.
I said pull over.
I won't let you do it. I don't care what happens.
Take it easy. You want to kill us both?
Sure, I will kill us both. We die together or we live together. Yes or no?
You're nuts.
Answer me.
The answer is no.
Well, no, you will see I mean what I say.
Fog thinned out just as we rounded a bend in the road. There was a point ahead with a sheer 300-foot drop to the sea. She jerked the car away from the pavement and steered straight at it. I grabbed the wheel and pushed it. The car skidded on gravel and slid sideways toward the cliff. I got the door open and tried to yank her out with me. She held on and kicked me until I rolled free. She didn't look very beautiful when I saw her for the last time. And the flashy convertible was a pile of junk. Very expensive junk, but junk all the same. I understand the federal men have confiscated the platinum and are holding Lovelace for questioning. I doubt if he'll crack. Nobody can embarrass a used car salesman. Period. End of report.
Sam, do you really like this racket we're in?
I hate it.
So do I. But don't let ever go into any other racket.
It's a promise, sweetheart. Why, I'll never know.
Good night, Sam.
Good night, sweetheart.
The Adventures of Sam Spade, Dashiell Hammett's famous private detective, was written for radio by Bob Tallman and Gil Dowd, with musical direction by Lud Bluskin. Sam Spade is played by Howard Duff. Lorene Tuttle is Effie. Tonight's program was directed by Elliot Lewis.
That wraps it up for tonight's show at 1001 Radio Grime Solvers. We really enjoy good reviews, so when you have a chance, say something nice about a selection of shows, or maybe suggest some to us. Thanks for joining us. See you next time.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.